Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:21 p.m. and today is March 11th. And I thought we'd kick off today with the Dow Jones. It's at another new high. It didn't quite hold all of it through the end of the day, but it's certainly been pushing on to new high ground. And the most classic stock market indicator from decades past is the Dow theory, when the industrials and the transportation average are both at new highs. We're in a new bull market. So that should be viewed as, I guess, something that's rather encouraging. When we look at the S&P 500, it did briefly push on to new high ground. So we may be in for some pause and consolidation, particularly in view of the big pop we've had over the course of the last 5 days. And of course, one of the big pieces of news today is that the Biden administration have now passed the stimulus package. So there is going to be a lot of money flowing out to lots of different people. In many respects, I have a feeling that this is going to be sort of like a nostalgia recovery. So when we look at, for example, the S&P retail ETF, it did fantastically well. And part of the reason for that is because it is filled with these meme stocks. So when we think about the kinds of companies that have been in it and represent the biggest weightings, well, GameStop is certainly one of them, design or brands, Children's Place, and Michaels. These are all the kinds of companies that have done well from the meme shares that have been promoted by the Reddit army. So when we then think about other companies, the one that really springs to mind is Build-A-Bear. It's, for anyone who's not familiar with Build-A-Bear, it's a company where you go in and you pick your bear and they go through a little ritual and kids absolutely adore it. And it's the kind of place that very lucky kids with wealthy parents get to go for their birthday parties. And everybody gets a $20 little cuddly toy as a result of it. And they really weren't doing very well all the way through from 2015 to 2020. But I did notice that my children have started talking about their times going to Build-A-Bear over the course of the last few weeks, particularly when they heard that there'll be stimulus going out to representing children as well as adults in the next round of stimulus. And when we think about the impact of the pandemics, well, certainly there's been a lot of stimulus. But also, of course, we know that most people have been locked up for a year. And I get the feeling that people are longing for what might be considered the classic retail experience, which is wandering around the shops and finding something new and just taking in the hustle and bustle around them. So it could, in fact, be really rather positive for the survivors. Obviously, there's an awful lot of retail locations have gone bust. There's a significant number of operations that have had to close a lot of stores. And then, of course, we know that the high yield spreads have contracted considerably amid a record amount of issuance last year. Well, that high yield spread is still only at about 290 basis points, and it might have gone up a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but certainly nothing in the magnitude of the kinds of rises we've seen at any point over the last decade. So retail companies have had the opportunity to get rid of some of their less productive stores. They've been able to refinance debt, and then you have a whole slew of people who've been locked up for a year and just want to get back to life as normal. And one of the first places a lot of people will probably end up going is the mall, because it's a no-cost way of simply engaging with more people. So that's quite potentially going to be beneficial for a substantial number of these brick and mortar retailers. It also suggests that anyone who's thinking about the K-shaped recovery is probably in for a surprise. There's certainly something that is worth considering that if we are going to have a K-shaped recovery, it might be rather different than what people might have thought it would be. For example, the cloud computing sector did enormously well in 2020 and through to February of this year. We've now gone through a process of mean reversion, and it is rebounding and doing so in a reasonably dynamic manner. So that's confirmation that at least with interest rates still low and abundant liquidity, then we're going to continue to see asset price inflation. And the world got an additional dose of that in here today with the ECB. They're looking at government bond yields rising. Now, I think it's interesting that we're still talking about negative yields in much of Europe, and particularly in Germany, that we've had a meaningful increase in the yield. In fact, the yield has doubled, going from minus 60 to minus 30 basis points, but it's still negative, and now we're seeing the ECB moving in and implementing a form of yield curve control. So they're in there buying bonds. That's really great news for places like Italy. So Italian bond yields continue to contract, and it's a clear message that the ECB is just not going to tolerate any kind of significant sale in a lot of these peripheral bonds. So they're not viewing it as stimulus. They're viewing it as controlling the bond market. And controlling the bond market means that it's going to have leakage. There are, if the ECB is in there buying bonds, then they're buying them from somebody, and that somebody now has cash, and they're going to try and invest that cash. So you're going to have leakage into asset prices. We're already seeing that in the stock market, the European stock market. And this is the Europe 600, so it's not just the Eurozone, is on the cusp of breaking out of what is effectively a 21-year range. It's another one of these indices that was just ready to do that before the pandemic, and now it's doing it again. And this whole year of lockdown has just been a, will probably look like a bad memory in another year from now. But if the ECB is going to continue to suppress yields, then it is fuel for speculative activity, and the leakage will be obviously in the stock market. It'll be in asset prices generally. That's certainly true for property, and most particularly in Germany and anywhere that has extraordinarily low interest rates. And then when we think about what is happening in the UK, well, Rishi Sunak has increased the mandate for what the Bank of England is supposed to do. So they don't just have to try and keep inflation down now. They have secondary mandates as well. And of course, this one is not a new one, that they've had to try and achieve the government's growth targets. And now they also have a whole raft of suggestions about how they are going to achieve a carbon neutral economy overall. Well, these are political ambitions being imposed upon the monetary authority, and it really does help to highlight that central banks are not independent. They're nominally independent. They're independent from operational scrutiny. So it's not like politicians are in there telling them what to do from day to day, or when people should take holidays, or how people should be paid, or those sorts of operational decisions. But they are completely susceptible to politicians telling them what they should do in terms of monetary aggregates. And that is true everywhere. So when we look at what's happening in terms of the UK, I think it's a foretaste of what we can anticipate, that we now need to save the planet, and therefore we need to tell the central bank that they need to do something about it. And it is this need number, this need word and need objective that tends to creep in. And all of these changes to the monetary environment are proposed on a needs-must basis. It's simply that we don't have a choice. It has to be done. There's just no way that we can tolerate the rise in yields. That's what the ECB is doing. They're intervening to compress yields. The Bank of England is now intervening in a political way to change how monetary policy is conducted. And then, of course, with the kind of spending and changes that will incur and the imposition of clear moves to increase the price of emissions, then it's quite likely that this is going to also have leakage. So when we think then about the emissions prices, there is a political mandate right across Europe to ensure that they are as high as possible. And this is a government-fueled bull market. So it's simply hard to imagine how we're going to see carbon prices coming down. The money for all of these programs has to come from somewhere. So when we think about what Royal Dutch Shell is doing in terms of trying to transition into what is effectively a super utility, then they are buying up pieces of infrastructure for energy trading and distributed electricity and wind and solar. And then, of course, they have been concentrating on natural gas for a long time. They are transitioning from being an outright fossil fuel company to more of a blend. And that, of course, is 100% aimed at trying to comply with the political prerogatives and also for limiting the expense of consuming carbon credits. The basic business model of all European energy companies will now be to control the cost of carbon credits, because they are only going one way. And of course, that completely transforms the profitability of alternatives. This is exactly the same business model that Tesla really profited on. The company simply would not exist were it not for the carbon trading mandates. And it's quite likely that the revolution and the growth of the hydrogen sector will also be significantly boosted by the continued rise in carbon pricing. But if we then think about the outlook for other central banks, well, everybody had to print an enormous amount of money in 2020, and nobody wants to see interest rates rise. Most governments, in fact, saw the cost of servicing their debt decline in 2020 because of the low interest rate environment, and that was even though the quantity of debt increased substantially. Well, these governments have ongoing funding requirements, and paying more for that funding is just not going to be something that they want to see. So the economic recovery in the USA continues apace. There is continued demand for housing, and then we can think about the continued rise in the gasoline price, for example. And this has been really quite an impressive rebound. It's now right back where it was in the middle of 2019. Well, that's obviously representative of both the shutdown of the refineries due to this extremely cold weather a couple of weeks ago in Texas, as well as renewed demand. And of course, if a lot of people are moving around, well, they're obviously driving more. Well, that's also representative of economic growth. And then we can think about the companies that really will benefit from people having an extra $1,400 in their pockets. Well, Etsy is certainly one of them. It's interesting that a new iPhone costs about $1,000. A new gaming PC can be got for approximately $1,000 or maybe $1,500. And then, of course, you've got the 70-inch TVs, which I think will probably miraculously fall to a price of $1,400 before the end of the week. So that's likely to be a significant shot in the arm for a large number of companies. And we have a significant number of these mega cap companies that are right in the region of their respective trend means and beginning to demonstrate support. Well, then we can think about what's next in bond yields. Well, we know what's happened in the EU, and we know what's happening in the UK. The UK is certainly a change. It's not an urgent change, and there hasn't been any effort yet to control the yield curve, but it's not too hard to imagine that that is coming. The trend in the 10-year in the USA is still really quite consistent, and it was well off its lows in here today. So this does look like we're going to see additional higher yields. Eventually, we are likely to see measures to contain this threat, and it's quite likely to start in the repo markets. So we certainly need to pay attention to what's happening in the money markets, and not least as this vast quantity of money exits the Federal Reserve and makes its way into the economy and most likely back into the Fed through the banking sector. Then, when we look further afield, well, the dollar is now starting to come back down again, having reverted to the mean. It has been down for 3 consecutive days. Then, that is obviously helping to bolster the outlook for some of the Asian currencies, and the Asia dollar index was well off its lows over the course of the last 3 days as well, and it continues to look like a recovery overall. The Chinese renminbi had broken down on Monday, but it has given up some of that decline, or excuse me, or it's excuse me, given up some of that advance. But China probably wants a somewhat weaker currency because it's had one of the strongest currencies anywhere for most of the last year. The Singapore market continues to push higher. One thing that I think is relevant is that, in many respects, Singapore is viewed as a value destination in much the same way that Japan is viewed as a value destination for investments. And the Nikkei was in positive territory in here today. In Europe, the UK tends to be viewed more as a value sector. And then, of course, there is a whole industry of investing in value in the USA. So there's certainly still this rotation into value overall. The Chinese administration said in very clear terms that they were intervening to support the market about 3 days ago. There was a lagged response, but it did bounce today from the region of the trend mean. The most important thing for China is that they maintain orderly markets, so they don't want to see major declines. And every time they do get a reversion, you seem to see these stepping in measures to support prices. Well, obviously there are geopolitical tensions that are rising, and they're just not about to go away. And that does it represent a risk premium for anyone investing in China. The other side of the spectrum is India, and that is a country that is being preferred as an alternative in terms of geopolitical partnership and being a counterweight to China in the region. And the Nifty continues to trend higher in here. It probably also means that India is going to have an easier time sourcing funding internationally, because people have a vested interest in ensuring that India is a place where development does in fact occur. Then we can think about what's happening in Brazil. Well, the Brazilian currency has been rebounding, and it improved upon that performance in here today. And it is definitely finding short-term support in the region of the lows from back in May of last year. So this is encouraging. We can also think about some of these industrial metals. The tin price had pulled back really rather sharply, but it has bounced from the region of the peaks from back in 2017 through 19 and back to 2013 and 14 as well. And nickel prices, they do tend to be quite volatile. So we did have a rather acute pullback over the last 3 weeks, but it is now beginning to demonstrate support in the region of the trend mean. I think it's also notable that the trend mean has not been a particularly reliable area of support over the course of the last few years. It has tended to dip below it. So if it does start finding support in the region of the trend mean, that would certainly be supportive of the view that we are back in a demand-dominated environment over the medium term, and that there is a bigger imbalance in favor of demand. Gold prices are due a $100 rebound, because that's what it's done from the $1,900 area and then from the $1,800 area. So the fact that it was in negative territory today, it's suggestive of the fact that investors are less worried about needing a safe haven. But I think it is inevitable that we're moving towards a process of yield curve control. And once that occurs, it's likely to be the catalyst for an aggressive move back into gold. And we're probably not there quite yet. So we're still at the point where we need to see evidence that demand is coming through in a more aggressive fashion. And then when we look at the gold miners, they are recovering. So we've had a meaningful bounce from the $30 area. It hasn't quite yet been able to break the sequence of lower rally highs. If it can sustain a move above the 35 area, then that really would be rather encouraging, back above the trend mean, and we're definitely talking about a clear recovery. The reality is that gold might be pulling back, but the vast majority of miners are in a strengthening balance sheet environment, and there really aren't that many businesses that have got the kind of margins that gold miners have at present. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.